Chapter 32. Windy corridors, mildewed dungeons, and the tribe of Daws peering invidiously upon her from overhead, that she forgot the flight of time. Nearly three quarters of an hour passed before she came out from the immense walls and looked from an opening to the front over the wide expanse of the outer ward by which S.E. had ascended. Ethelberta was taken aback to see there a file of shining carriages, which had arrived during her seclusion in the keep. From these began to burst a miscellany of many colored draperies, blue, buff, pied, and black. They united into one, and crept up the incline like a cloud, which then parted into fragments, dived into old doorways, and lost substance behind projecting piles. Recognizing in this the ladies and gentlemen of the meeting, her first thought was how to escape, for she was suddenly overcome with dread to meet them all single-handed as she stood. She drew back and hurried round to the side, as the laughter and voices of the assembly began to be audible, and, more than ever vexed that she could not have fallen in with them in some unobtrusive way, Ethelberta found that they were immediately beneath her. Venturing to peep forward again, what was her mortification at finding them gathered in a ring, round no object of interest belonging to the ruin, but round her faithful beast, who had loosened himself in some way from the stone, and stood in the middle of a plat of grass, placidly regarding them. Being now in the teeth of the association, there was nothing to do but to go on, since, if she did not, the next few steps of their advance would disclose her. She made the best of it, and began to descend in the broad view of the assembly, from the midst of which proceeded a laugh, he he he. Apostrophe apostrophe Ethelberta knew that Lord Mountclear was there. The poor thing has strayed from its owner, apostrophe said one lady, as they all stood eyeing the apparition of the ass. It may belong to some of the villagers, apostrophe said the president in a historical voice. And it may be appropriate to mention that many were kept here in olden times. They were largely used as beasts of burden in victualling the castle previous to the last siege, in the year 1645. Apostrophe apostrophe, it is very weary, and has come a long way, I think, apostrophe said a lady, adding, in an imaginative tone, the humble creature looks so aged, and is so quaintly saddled, that we may suppose it to be only an animated relic, of the same date as the other remains. Apostrophe apostrophe, by this time Lord Mountclear had noticed Ethelberta's presence, and straightening himself to 10 years younger, he lifted his hat in answer to her smile, and came up jauntily. It was a good time now to see what the Viscount was really like. He appeared to be about 65, and the dignified aspect which he wore to a gazer at a distance became depreciated to jocund slyness upon nearer view, when the small type could be read between the leading lines. Then it could be seen that his upper lip dropped to a point in the middle, as if impressing silence upon his too demonstrative lower one. His right and left profiles were different, one corner of his mouth being more compressed than the other, producing a deep line thence downwards to the side of his chin. Each eyebrow rose obliquely outwards and upwards, and was thus far above the little eye, shining with the clearness of a pond that has just been able to weather the heats of summer. Below this was a preternaturally fat jowl, which, by thrusting against cheeks and chin, caused the arch old mouth to be almost buried at the corners. A few words of greeting passed, and Ethelberta told him how she was fearing to meet them all, united and primed with their morning's knowledge as they appeared to be. Well, we have not done much yet, apostrophe said Lord Mountclear. As for myself, I have given no thought at all to our day's work. I had not forgotten your promise to attend, if you could possibly drive across, and he he he. I have frequently looked towards the hill where the road descends. Will you now permit me to introduce some of my party, as many of them as you care to know by name? I think they would all like to speak to you. apostrophe apostrophe, Ethelberta then found herself nominally made known to 10 or 12 ladies and gentlemen who had wished for special acquaintance with her. She stood there, as all women stand who have made themselves remarkable by their originality, or devotion to any singular cause, as a person freed of her hampering and inconvenient sex, and, by virtue of her popularity, unfettered from the conventionalities of manner prescribed by custom for household womankind. The charter to move abroad unchaperoned, which society for good reasons grants only to women of 3 sorts, the famous, the ministering, and the improper, Ethelberta was in a fair way to make splendid use of. Instead of walking in protected lanes, she experienced that luxury of isolation which normally is enjoyed by men alone, in conjunction with the attention naturally bestowed on a woman young and fair. Among the presentations were Mr. and Mrs. Tin, member, and members mainspring for North Wessex, Sir Cyril and Lady Blansberry, Lady Jane Joy, and the Honorable Edgar Mountclere, the Viscount's brother. There also hovered near her the learned Dr. Yore, Mr. Small, a profound writer, who never printed his works, the Reverend Mr. Brooke, rector, the very Reverend Dr. Taylor, dean, and the undoubtedly Reverend Mr. Tinkleton, nonconformist, who had slipped into the fold by chance. These and others looked with interest at Ethelberta. The old county father's heart, as at a questionable town phenomenon, the county sons tenderly, as at a pretty creature, and the county daughters with great admiration, as at a lady reported by their mamas, to be no better than she should be. It will be seen that Ethelberta was the sort of woman that well-rooted local people might like to look at on such a free and friendly occasion as an archaeological meeting, where, to gratify a pleasant whim, the picturesque form of acquaintance is for the nonce preferred to the useful, the spirits being so brisk as to swerve from strict attention to the select and sequent gifts of heaven, blood, and acres, to consider for an idle moment the subversive Mephistophelian endowment, brains. Our progress in the survey of the castle has not been far as yet, apostrophe Lord Mountclere resumed. Indeed, we have only just arrived, the weather this morning being so unsettled. When you came up, we were engaged in a preliminary study of the poor animal you see there. How it could have got up here we cannot understand. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he pointed as he spoke to the donkey which had brought Ethelberta thither, whereupon she was silent, and gazed at her untoward beast, as if as he had never before beheld him. The ass looked at Ethelberta, as though he would say, why don't you own me, after safely bringing you over those weary hills? Apostrophe, apostrophe, but the pride and emulation which had made her what she was, would not permit her, as the most lovely woman there, to take upon her own shoulders the ridicule that had already been cast upon the ass. Had he been young and gaily caparisoned, she might have done it, but his age, the clumsy trappings of rustic make, and his needy woeful look of hard servitude, were too much to endure. Many come and picnic here, apostrophe she said serenely, and the animal may have been left till they return from some walk. Apostrophe, apostrophe, true, apostrophe said Lord Mountclere, without the slightest suspicion of the truth. The humble ass hung his head in his usual manner, and it demanded little fancy from Ethelberta to imagine that he despised her. And then her mind flew back to her history and extraction, to her father perhaps at that moment inventing a private plate powder in an underground pantry, and with a groan at her inconsistency in being ashamed of the ass, she said in her heart, my God, what a thing am I! Apostrophe, apostrophe, they then all moved on to another part of the castle, the Viscount busying himself round and round her person like the head scraper at a pig killing, and as they went indiscriminately mingled, jesting lightly or talking in earnest, she beheld ahead of her the form of Ney among the rest. Now, there could only be one reason on earth for Ney's presence. Her remark, that she might attend for Ney, took no more interest in antiquities than in the back of the moon. Ethelberta was a little flurried. Perhaps he had come to scold her, or to treat her badly in that indefinable way of his by which he could make a woman feel as nothing without any direct act at all. She was afraid of him, and, determining to shun him, was thankful that Lord Mountclair was near, to take off the edge of Ney's manner towards her if he approached. Do you know in what part of the ruins the lecture is to be given? She said to the Viscount. Wherever you like, he replied gallantly. Do you propose a place, and I will get Dr. Yore to adopt it. Say, shall it be here, or where they are standing? How could Ethelberta refrain from exercising a little power, when it was put into her hands in this way? Let it be here, she said, if it makes no difference to the meeting. It shall be, said Lord Mountclair. And then the lively old nobleman skipped like a roe to the president, and to Dr. Yore, who was to read the paper on the castle, and they soon appeared coming back to where the Viscount's party and Ethelberta were beginning to seat themselves. The bulk of the company followed, and Dr. Yore began. He must have had a countenance of leather as, indeed, from his color he appeared to have to stand unmoved in his position, and read, and look up to give explanations, without a change of muscle, under the dozens of bright eyes that were there converged upon him, like the sticks of a fan, from the ladies who sat round him in a semicircle upon the grass. However, he went on calmly, and the women sheltered themselves from the heat with their umbrellas and sunshades, their ears lulled by the hum of insects, and by the drone of the doctor's voice. The reader buzzed on with the history of the castle, tracing its development from a mound with a few earthworks to its condition in Norman times. He related monkish marvels connected with the spot, its resistance under Matilda to Stephen, its probable shape, while a residence of King John, and the sad story of the damsel of Brittany, sister of his victim Arthur, who was confined here in company with the two daughters of Alexander, King of Scotland. He went on to recount the confinement of Edward II. Herein, previous to his murder at Berkeley, the gay doings in the reign of Elizabeth, and so downward through time to the final overthrow of the stern old pile. As he proceeded, the lecturer pointed with his finger at the various features appertaining to the date of his story, which he told with splendid vigor, when he had warmed to his work, till his narrative, particularly in the conjectural and romantic parts, where it became colored rather by the speaker's imagination than by the pigments of history, gathered together the wandering thoughts of all. It was easy for him then to meet those fair concentrated eyes, when the sunshades were thrown back, and complexions forgotten, in the interest of the history. The doctor's face was then no longer criticized as a rugged boulder, a dried fig, an oak carving, or a walnut shell, but became blotted out like a mountaintop in a shining haze by the nebulous pictures conjured by his tale. Then the lecture ended, and questions were asked, and individuals of the company wandered at will, the light dresses of the ladies sweeping over the hot grass and brushing up thistle down which had hitherto lain quiescent, so that it rose in a flight from the skirts of each like a comet's tail. Some of Lord Mountclair's party, including himself and Ethelberta, wandered now into a cool dungeon, partly open to the air overhead, where long arms of ivy hung between their eyes and the white sky. While they were here, Lady Jane Joy and some other friends of the Viscount told Ethelberta that they were probably coming on to Nulcia. She instantly perceived that getting into close quarters in that way might be very inconvenient, considering the youngsters S.E. had under her charge, and straightway decided upon a point that S.E. had debated for several days, a visit to her aunt in Normandy. In London it had been a mere thought, but the channel had looked so tempting from its brink that the journey was virtually fixed. As soon as she reached Nulcia, and found that a little pleasure steamer crossed to Cherbourg once a week during the summer, so that she would not have to enter the crowded routes at all. "I am afraid I shall not see you in Nulcia," she said. I am about to go to Cherbourg, and then to Rouen. How sorry I am. When do you leave? At the beginning of next week, said Ethelberta, settling the time there and then. Did I hear you say that you were going to Cherbourg and Rouen? Lord Mountclair inquired. I think to do so, said Ethelberta. I am going to Normandy myself, said a voice behind her, and without turning she knew that Ney was standing there. They next went outside, and Lord Mountclair offered Ethelberta his arm on the ground of assisting her down the burnished grass slope. Ethelberta, taking pity upon him, took it, but the assistance was all on her side. She stood like a statue amid his slips and totterings, some of which taxed her strength heavily, and her ingenuity more, to appear as the supported, and not the supporter. The incident brought Ney still further from his retirement, and she learned that he was one of a yachting party which had put in at Nulcia that morning. She was greatly relieved to find that he was just now on his way to London, whence he would probably proceed on his journey abroad. Ethelberta adhered as well as she could to her resolve that Ney should not speak with her alone, but by dint of perseverance he did manage to address her without being overheard. Will you give me an answer? Said Ney. I have come on purpose. I cannot just now. I have been led to doubt you. Doubt me? What new wrong have I done? Spoken jestingly of my visit to Farmfield. Good. I did not speak or think of you. When I told that incident I had no idea who the lady was. I did not know it was you till 2 days later, and I at once held my tongue. I vow to you upon my soul and life that what I say is true. How shall I prove my truth better than by my errand here? Don't speak of this now. I am so occupied with other things. I am going to Rouen, and will think of it on my way. I am going there too. When do you go? I shall be in Rouen next Wednesday, I hope. May I ask where? Hotel Beausejour. Will you give me an answer there? I can easily call upon you. It is now a month and more since you first led me to hope. I did not lead you to hope at any rate clearly. Indirectly you did. And although I am willing to be as considerate as any man ought to be in giving you time to think over the question, there is a limit to my patience. Any necessary delay I... Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.